What are all those figurines behind you? Is that Ninja Turtles?
So yeah, so it's all like my childhood toys.
Oh, that's amazing.
So I found all my childhood toys, and then on top is like memorabilia, like sports memorabilia. And then this shelf right here is all just stuff that like from business, like things.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like my old company, from my first company, a candle from Damon John that he sent me to congratulate me, like just business stuff. The top shelf is memorabilia, and then the rest are like toys from my childhood.
You're Canadian, so I think you remember these. Do you remember Pogs?
What are Pogs?
Pogs.
Oh, Pogs. Yeah. 100%.
I wish I had kept those. I saw photos of them recently, and I was like, oh my God, those things were so dope. Like,
yeah.
So dope.
Yeah.
Ah.
Yeah. Man.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's my office now, and I'm putting up new stuff all around, which you can't see, but yeah.
Nice decorating skills. Love it.
Found my old bag. It's gonna go to my kid anyways. Let's have it here.
Yeah, it'll be worth a lot by then. Yeah.
All right, let's get started.
This is the Perfectly Mentored Podcast with your host, Jason Portnoy. Yeah.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Perfectly Mentored. I'm your host, Jason Portnoy, and my guest today is Kat Howell, someone I know very, very, very well, someone who actually got me started down this whole business that I'm in and my new life that I'm living. Kat, for those who don't know who you are, I hate giving intros and bios. I rather you give it because you can say it a lot better than I can, and you'll hit the important points. So for everyone listening who doesn't know you or not fortunate enough to know you, give them the little bio.
Yeah, so firstly, hi, and thank you so much for having me on your podcast, and congratulations on all of your success, Jason. It's been incredible watching you grow. We first got introduced because of a program that I was running around growing and scaling a Facebook advertising agency. And I'm also the founder of 8Loop Social, an advertising agency based out of Auckland, New Zealand. We specialize in events, both high ticket and low ticket. So that's kind of like the condensed version of what I do.
Great. I mean, I want to talk really about groups. Like one of the biggest thing, it's huge now. What made you decide to build a Facebook group back then? I mean, back then it was all about pages. Facebook groups weren't so big, and now you're seeing a lot of emphasis on groups and groups popping up all the time. But what gave you the foresight or the interest in building a group at that time?
Yeah, great question. Well, if I'm brutally honest, it was actually my own mentor who said, start a group. And I was like, okay, I'll do it. And I really kind of struggled at first to grow the group because I didn't understand what was required or the mechanics of how to create a flourishing, engaging community and also ride off of the organic push that Facebook is really driving behind groups at the moment. I'm so grateful that I did create a group because, as you and I both know, Facebook is currently in a race right now to create more advertising real estate because the new desktop newsfeed, mobile newsfeed, Instagram newsfeed are all getting very saturated. So it's looking at things like Facebook groups, marketplace. I don't know if you've heard there's a dating app coming out with Facebook soon. I'm sure there's going to be ads in that. So it's really aggressively looking at how can we create more advertising real estate. So it's an easy way to build up your audience if you do it the right way, because you can essentially get Facebook to grow it for you in many ways.
And 8Loop Social, what made you decide to start an agency? I mean, especially one all around Facebook ads. I mean, you were probably one of the first of its kind back then. Now you see there were SEO shops and they were closing down, you know, in 2011, thousands of SEO shops closed down because there was just a million of them. What made you get into Facebook and when did you really start to notice its power?
Yeah, so honestly, it was kind of like I kind of tripped and face planted into it. it wasn't something that I said, sat down and went, okay, this is going to be my business plan and do-do-do-do-do. It was more a matter of I tried to launch my own online business and I had no idea what I was doing with that. It was like this travel website, Jason. I was going to get bought out by Lonely Planet with $1 billion. I already had like my sailboat plan and everything. And unbeknownst to me, you can't just launch a website and expect millions of people to come to your site. And that's what I literally thought would happen. And I had to swallow a hard pill. And when I realized, okay, this is actually not how it works. And I tried to figure it out my own. And I started to play with ads and digital marketing. And as a consequence of that, because it was so fresh back then and no one was really kind of like, you didn't learn this stuff in school. In fact, you still really don't learn this stuff in school. But a couple of companies that I was working with, because I was working in a business association, started to take notice and were asking for some help. And initially it started off as contracting jobs. And then it got to the stage where I was just getting too busy. And I realized, okay, I need to hire people to help support me. And that's sort of how I fell into the agency side. Initially we were doing everything. So we were doing content marketing, Twitter, website, everything, which was a horrible, horrible idea. And the reason that I niched down into Facebook advertising was because I was burning out. I was literally like not making any money. I was exhausted. I was doing everything for these businesses. And we just weren't able to build like a really strong core competence or zone of genius. So that's when I recognized like, okay, Facebook seems to really be growing pretty quickly. When I got started, there was not even like retargeting. That wasn't even a thing. I remember like if you didn't spell your headlines properly, like if you had a grammar mistake or if you didn't even have a period at the end of your headline, your ad would get disapproved. Like it was a different beast, but I could see that it was gaining a lot of momentum and, that it, yeah, I'm just lucky that I slipped into it when I did. Yeah, for sure.
So we have almost similar backgrounds, right? Cause I had my clothing brand and I was running Facebook ads at the time. And it was a time where I laughed that it was like, all right, that's raw. It was at a time where, you know, you could literally scrape your company's audience, like your competitor's audience off of them and grab all the user IDs, just upload it and retarget. So,
oh, I remember that. Yeah.
So that was great. It was the easiest way to build anything. You know, you find your competitors, you take everyone who commented on their pages or people of interest in page, and you could literally scrape every single one of the people in that audience.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those were good times.
We should start a thread, like a reminiscing thread. Eh? Do you remember back in the day?
And it was really all you have to do is post the picture of your product on it and say, share for a chance to win.
Yeah.
And you'd get like 14,000 like comments and shares within 3 days.
You can't even do that now, right?
They're different time. How important is it now to build a group? I mean, you built a group back then. Is it just as easy to build a group these days? Is it just as much of a necessity? I mean, it wasn't a necessity back then, but do you think groups are getting priority over pages in terms of how business should look at what they're doing next?
Yeah, so I don't know that it's a necessity necessarily, but it's certainly the way that I look at groups is like it's an email list on steroids. But there is a caveat, and that is that you don't own it. So unlike an email list, which isn't what we call like an owned audience, your Facebook group is owned by Facebook and will always be owned by Facebook. So I think for anyone looking at growing a group, one of the important things to realize is you don't own that, and Facebook could literally shut you down. In fact, they did shut us down one time for, I think it was for about 5 days we got shut down. And at that stage, the group had like 40,000 people. So that was a very sort of a stressful time. And if you plan on growing a group, just recognize that and put into place some tactics or strategies to collecting email addresses or building your own audience. So you can do that by asking questions when people opt into your group, what's your email address? And then there's plugins that you can use to sync that into a CRM. But little things like that, just to protect yourself. In terms of like, should you do it? I really think that comes down to the resources that you have, because one of the things that I'm guilty of, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs are guilty of, especially after going to conferences, I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but everyone's talking about their funnels and what they're doing, and you get like the shiny object syndrome, and you're like, I'm going to do bots, and I'm going to do Twitter, and I'm going to do LinkedIn, and I'm going to do display, and I'm going to do YouTube. And you just end up stretching yourself so thin as a result of it. So, and a lot of businesses did that in the beginning where they were like, let's just go on every social media platform rather than just focusing on one or two and really nailing those out of the park and then going on to the others. So what I would say is like, identify first and foremost which channels are right for you. And yeah, consider Facebook groups in there. What typically works best is if you have a very high affinity niche audience. So for example, photography, people that bicycle, there's, you know, so cyclists are so high affinity in the sport that they do that building a group around that is easy. Dogs, you know, if you have a community of marketers or things like that. So consider your audience. Is it a kind of audience that want to connect and collaborate? Do they have high affinity with what they're doing or the space that you're in? And if the answer is yes, then I would say that groups should be a very strong contender for you. Yeah.
And is it an important part of building yourself up as an authority figure? Like, because AdHacks kind of made you the authority figure on Facebook ads, correct?
Yeah, it did in many ways, totally. Yeah.
So then when the group takes on a life of its own, right, and you start growing and growing, eventually, hopefully you're attracting a good community with enough talent in there that they could kind of sustain the group and you don't have to be the one posting all the time. You eventually get to a point where there are people in the group who may actually know more than you. For people listening who are afraid of that, right? You know, because they built this up as the authority figure. Now what happens if they start posting and people start questioning the stuff they're posting? How do you handle that?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I've heard different takes on this from people that are in similar position as me. There's some people that are like, no, don't even let, like, for example, like, you could say Jason Swank, Tim Bird, like those guys are my competitors, Dan Henry, right? They're all mates of mine, actually. Like I really respect them and I really like them. And so some would take the stance, like, don't let them in the group because, you know, you're kind of allowing them to use your own list. My take on it is like, listen, if you're going to come in the group and promote yourself, that's a problem because that's, to me, that's the same as like, if you built up an email list, Jason, and you put a lot of resources and time, and then all of a sudden I just like, went into your active campaign, swiped your email list, and then blasted them. Like, I feel like that's out of integrity in many, many ways and disrespectful. However, if you were going to say, hey, you know what? I have like something that I know your audience would really love. Like, here's a tip or a hack that I just discovered and it really helps them. And actually it helps build your authority in many ways. To me, that's like a value add to the group, and people then perceive that group as like, oh, this is the place to be if you want to be a Facebook marketer. So I actually encourage that. Like, I love that because I would rather people look at ad hacks as like, hey, people are posting amazing tips and hacks in there versus like, it's a monopoly and it's only Catherine. And the reality is like, even me, as immersed as I am in Facebook ads and marketing, I still can't stay across everything. Like there's even Facebook can't fucking stay across everything they're doing. Like, so it's so disillusioned of me to pretend that I know everything there is with Facebook advertising. Because even the best practices, as you know, is often not actually what's even working in the marketplace, right? And we only specialize in certain niches. And yes, I have a lot of exposure to a lot of ad accounts and stuff through the programs. But even then, I can't stay across it 24/7 all the time. So for me, I see it as like a value add. So if people are posting promotional stuff, that's a problem. But if they're posting like tips and it's building their authority as a consequence, honestly, the world is so abundant. It's not a problem. Yeah. Yeah.
I love the transparency there, because I said the same thing the other day. I spoke to a client who said, we tried everything with Facebook and it didn't work. I'm like, you've tried everything with Facebook ads and it didn't work. I'm in Facebook ads manager every single day and I haven't even tried everything or even come close to doing everything. So the fact that you have your online business and you've tried everything, that's incredible.
Right? I love that response.
Yeah, I mean, but that's the thing, you know, it's important as marketers that we do have that transparency, that we're not, as much as you're an expert and people look up to you, it's not, you're not the end all be all. If people put in the time and commitment that you've put in to grow and become that way, they could become the next Cat Howell. They could become the next, you know, whoever and be there. It's just, you've actually done the work to get there.
This is exactly why you niche as an agency or as a freelancer, like for this very fucking reason, because if you are all over the place working real estate, e-com, events, coaches, like as you just said, you know, it's so hard to stay across like everything and everything that's working, and so then you end up being like kind of mediocre at everything, versus if you go like, you hone in and you go, you know what, I'm just gonna work with life coaches, for example, that's my thing, and you start working with those kinds of funnels again and again and again, then you can really just like ignore all the other stuff, like ignore what's working with e-commerce, ignore all of that stuff and zone in on this one area and actually become so good at it, so that when a client comes to you and says, oh, we've tried everything or this, and you go, well, you probably haven't tried with people that specialize in exactly with what you're doing and have just done these with their eyes closed time and time again, you know? Yeah.
How afraid are you of building, you know, you're building a nice business of teaching people how to scale their agencies or become great at Facebook ads and build business, you know, being a Facebook ad agency, that it's going to become like the SEO shops back in, you know, 2000 in the early 2000s, everyone was doing SEO. I mean, not everyone was doing SEO. It was becoming like how Facebook ads are now. People were trepidant to getting into it, but the real marketers knew that you had to be in there. And then by 2011, there were just so many people doing it. It was so saturated that half those people who just stayed as an SEO company, you know, just failed or closed up shop. How afraid are you that that's going to happen to the Facebook world?
I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. Honestly, yes. Is Facebook going to be around in 10 years? I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. But would you honestly be wanting to do what you're doing in 10 years' time? My guess is probably not. Like, you probably will have created other businesses by then, hopefully, right? Most people of our generation can't like be doing the same freaking thing day in and day out for that long. So I think for the short term, and like at least the next sort of like 4 or 5 years, I don't see this going away. I see this just getting bigger and bigger and bigger, because the reality is like, there's really nothing like it out there in terms of like the data, in terms of how advertisers are able to penetrate the market and how aggressive Facebook is at growing the platform and buying competitors out and, you know, it's building up its portfolio in that way. There's really nothing like it out there. It's definitely growing super fast. But honestly, now is like way easier to be a Facebook marketer than when I got started. Because when I got started, and maybe you remember this, like, businesses didn't value it. It was like the intern's job. And it was like, here you go, here's $200 budget, have fun with it. And, you know, and the expectation was you were going to do their content and community management and the ads for that budget as well. Yep. Right. Like, it was hard. You had to beg to run ads for businesses. It was really, really hard. Even I worked with big brands like Coca-Cola, Fujifilm, like Contiki, some huge brands out there. And even then it was super hard. So I would say like now is the best time to get in here. And it may feel like it's oversaturated, but what I would say to that is it's probably because you're hanging around a lot of marketers and in circles of marketers. Whereas if you go in on the real world or like non-marketing circles, like most people are still not even doing freaking Facebook ads that have businesses. So the potential is huge and it's growing. And this is why Facebook is aggressively looking to build more real estate for advertisers, because it's just exponentially growing every single day. Even if there was like 2 million of us, we couldn't even service all the businesses that are out there. So I think like, yeah, for sure, maybe in 10 years that will be a thing, but for now this is like, this is the melting pot right now. This is the time when you want to come in. Yeah,
and it's a testament to the platform that you said that, because I had this conversation just yesterday with someone saying how, you know, because I'm in this marketing world, I'm on my newsfeed and I just think everyone's a marketer, everyone has a course to sell, everyone's doing this, everyone's doing that, that this is becoming so saturated. And then I go meet with a client who sat there and said, yeah, we've never really tried Facebook ads, or they've never heard of the big names that I've heard of. You know, they're not in that closed circle. And it just goes to show you that Facebook actually shows you stuff that you are actually part of. So I tell this to people all the time. If you don't like your newsfeed, start liking other pages of things that of just random things that you do like, and Facebook will slowly adapt and show you things that you only care about. But it is crazy how I believe the entire world are marketers just based off my Facebook feed.
Yeah. And you know what? I love this discussion right here, because this to me is, I'm really like really starting to dig the, lift the layers up on like what is reality and our perceptions and our emotions and our feelings and our thoughts and all of that at the moment. But this discussion here to me is so interesting, because you're totally right. If when I go on my sister's iPhone on her newsfeed, it is so black and white to mine. Like hers is all about it's a lot about, you know, writing and filmmaking and acting and media and stuff like that, because that's what she's interested in. Facebook is so good at knowing what you're interested in, because it's listening to you, it's reading your stuff, it's tracking you through your pixels, all your online activities. And it is basically an algorithm with the sole purpose of increasing your retention, your attention span and your engagement on that platform. So you're basically, your perception of reality has been hacked by an algorithm. And the way you perceive things, i.e. there's so many of us or it's oversaturated, is actually like, you have to remember behind that, it's a robot. It's an algorithm that is feeding you a skewed version of what's actually happening. So you have to be really, this is why I don't go on the newsfeed at all. I only go in Facebook groups, and that's it. I will never, ever be on the newsfeed. Pretty much. Sometimes I'm on it, but it's very, very rare. And the reason for that is because I have a very deep understanding now that actually what I'm seeing on my newsfeed is not reality. That's a bot. It's an algorithm that is shaping my perception of reality, which is a very dangerous thing to allow in your life. Yeah.
Which is also, I mean, if you look at what happened with the US elections, right? And you talk about all that. One of the things people don't realize is the people that saw those polarizing ads, it's because they weren't interested in that type of thing, right? So, you know, I heard, who did I hear? Someone said it best the other day that Facebook didn't make you a racist. You were already a racist, right?
Yeah.
You know, so it's, they just showed you stuff that you wanted to see, right? It didn't make you that person. It didn't make you go to the polls and vote one way or the other. It showed you stuff that you were already interested in.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's like the human psychology of decision making. And when you start to go into that as well, that's a little bit like disconcerting, because you start to realize like, A, we are all fucking racist to some level, at some extent. And then B, we are all very much susceptible to these kinds of strategies. You look at surveys that they run as a consequence of that election and the decision-making behaviors, and you go, actually, like, I could see how, in a way, that kind of gives you hope again for humankind, because you're like, okay, well, we're just, you know, it's psychology and marketing and, you know, but yeah, it's super interesting for sure. Yeah.
And the other thing that you said was, you know, in terms of building a Facebook agency these days, I think that's the way it always starts, right? It was way easier back then, but we had to beg to get people to use it, right? We had to beg to pay for people to let us spend $100 off it. And that also meant...
it was not easier. There was no information on it.
Fair enough. But yeah. I'm saying, hindsight, looking back, how much easier it would have been. If you had your knowledge now and go back like 5 to 6 years, 7 years and start then, like... Facebook was easier to run ads. I mean, it was just less saturated. I meant more in the sense that you had to beg companies to spend money. Mm-hmm. And that meant that you were also making their social media. You were also posting on all their platforms for them. And then slowly, you know, people started shifting and becoming more into it. And then it's crazy now that there are still people who sit there and say, I don't think I need it yet. And they're still putting money in things that make absolutely no sense for today's market. But I feel like that's always a shift. You saw it with SEO, you saw it. And there's going to be a time where it's just going to be like, businesses are going to want to jump in on Facebook, and it's going to be not crazy expensive, but way more expensive and way harder to get results than it was back then.
It's definitely going to be way more expensive. But what I would say to that is that it was like, almost too cheap to begin with, which was very funny to hear businesses, even I would complain about this sometimes, because it's like you were getting clicks for like 5 cents, and people would complain about how expensive or how the organic reach wasn't that good. And it's like, dude, you realize like you're not entitled to free marketing from anyone. You're a business, you're trying to sell things. Don't expect free advertising from anyone. You're not entitled to that at all. That doesn't exist in this capitalistic world. And yet people were up in arms about the organic reach and, oh, it's dropping and now you have to boost your posts. But duh, you're a business. You're making money. What else do you think? Do you think you're going to go to the radio station and they're going to give you a slot for free out of the goodwill of their heart? So what happened was Facebook was trying to really build mass numbers of both advertisers, businesses, as well as users by what most social media networks do, offering things for free, if very cheap. And then once they had that critical mass, then they turn on the ads and then it starts to get more popular and the price goes up. So is it getting more expensive? Absolutely. But if you look at cost per CPM, like cost per 1,000 impressions against LinkedIn, or against YouTube, or against Google, it is way cheaper. It is still by far the cheapest freaking platform out there. So again, I think a lot of that like, oh, it's getting so expensive is like, yeah, but look at it relative to what's actually on the marketplace. How much are you paying for your TV ads here? How much do you pay for your radio ads? How much CPM do you pay for every other thing? Like, I think the only cheapest CPM is like Twitter and like Reddit, you know? Go for Twitter if that's what you want. Like,
I actually made a post about this like a few months ago saying, why are Facebook ads so expensive? And then I showed that a New York Times, like, you know, one full page is $100,000 and you have to commit for like a certain amount of months. A billboard in Times Square was this amount. But yeah, Facebook ads are expensive.
Right. So I think we got spoiled is what happened. Yeah. And actually this phenomenon you will see for those of you that are agency owners and even yourself, have you ever given work pro bono or at a discounted price to someone where you're like, I really want to work with this and I see a huge opportunity. So, you know, our price is normally $10,000, but I'll do it for $4,000 for you. And what happens? What happens as soon as month 2 or 3 rolls around? What do you think happens?
They want that price.
They got spoiled, right? And all of a sudden the $10,000, which was the original price, is like so expensive to them and they have resistance. And it's like, dude, you can afford it. I just helped blow up your business and I did pro bono work for you. And now you're doing this to me. It's the same thing.
Well, you see that on, I see that on the client side all the time, especially when you start out and you do performance based, even where you're taking a percentage of sales. And, you know, when you're starting off and the sales aren't that great, sure, handing someone 10% or whatever of sales is, it's great. Sure, no problem. And then you start making them hundreds of thousands of dollars a month and they're writing that check to you. It's now like, whoa, wait, I'm paying you a lot of money.
Yeah. That's why we've had to add a cap now to how much we will invoice, because there's definitely a level which we've seen at around that 20, 25K mark where people start to go, fuck this, I'm hiring internally, or I'm going to hire someone cheaper.
Going back to authority building, how, if you were to start a new Facebook group today, let's say you're a financial advisor and you want to become the authority figure, what tips would you give the listeners to go ahead and do that and start building their community?
Yeah. So the first thing is try to not name your group after like your business. Make it more around the affinity space or the topic. So if you're a financial advisor, make it around, like if you're targeting homeowners or whatever, make it around homeownership Portland or whatever, instead of like your company name. Make it a closed group, because what happens if you have an open group is that people will look at the threads and they often forget to join because they can see everything already. Make it a closed group. And then invite about 20 to 30 of your friends and family initially inside of the group. Make sure that you only do that to like your super close friends and family, because there's nothing more annoying than getting added to a group that you didn't ask. But you can do that to your mom, your dad, your sister. That's what family's for, you know? But the reason you do that is that like no one wants to join a party that no one's a part of, basically. And then what you then do is what we've done for pretty much every single group we've grown is run ads. And you're not supposed to run ads to a Facebook asset like that. So you have to use a Bitly link to basically mask the URL. But if you run ads to that group, it'll cost you about between $2 to $4 per member normally. And you have to track it manually because you can't pixel it.
Yep.
If you get enough momentum and enough engagement happening. So what I would also advise is like get peers that you're friends with to also be in the group and reciprocate, like I'll post in your group and you post in mine, because then it's not just you all the time. That was one of the things that I did, and it was like a ghost town for a really long time because of that. And you want to make people feel comfortable to ask questions and that it's not just the same person. If you get enough critical growth and engagement happening pretty within the early stages, Facebook will notice that. And can, it's not a promise, but they can then pick up your group. And if you're in Facebook, you'll see on the right-hand column, they always push Facebook groups.
Yep.
So that's what they'll then start doing, is promoting your group in there, because for them, they want to make sure that they build up their audiences and engagement as much as possible. So if they see a group that's highly engaged, they're going to see a lot of value in growing that for you as well. Yeah.
As we wind down, I want to kind of tap into your mind and prediction. Where do you see the marketing world in like five years from now? We could jump forward 5 years. How do you see marketing being done then?
I see marketing in 5 years' time where we're going to have basically personal AI bots, as in like Siri, for example, that will be communicating with marketing bots pretty much. So for example, if you're trying to book a hair appointment, the way that you do it now is you click on the ad, you go through their funnel, you book a time in. Where I see this kind of going is like your personal PA, that will be your bot, whether that's Siri or something else, will be actually like triggering those things for you. So you tell your bot like, hey, I'm looking for a hair appointment in Portland, this is the price, and your bot is actually doing all of the freaking interactions for you and booking things in, communicating with other bots out there as well. Like travel, like booking all the hotels for you, booking the flights for you. So I kind of see that happening. which excites me because I hate booking this kind of stuff. Like, I hate doing this kind of stuff.
Well, so you kind of have it with Amazon Alexa, right? It's, you know, Alexa, I need new toilet paper.
Yeah. So I have a PA right now at Brooke, and she's amazing. And so a lot of what she does is, like, at the end of every day, she'll collate my emails, the most important things. And if she sees things that are relevant to me, she'll let me know. She'll bring it to my attention. So that's kind of what I'm seeing is going to be happening, is we'll have, like, personal AI bots who will be, like, instead of you being assaulted by all of these ads, will be collating the stuff that it knows is really relevant to you, and then bringing that to your forefront, which will make marketing very, very fucking interesting. Like, how is that going to work? How do you get in front of the bot? Like, how do you, it's going to be so niche, basically, which is already where we're seeing things going anyways. Yeah.
Probably going to have to start owning, like, voice keywords, like haircut, you know?
Yeah, totally.
On a personal level, do you have any, I mean, I think all entrepreneurs that I've spoken to are successful people have some sort of morning routine. Are you a morning routine person?
I'm not a morning person to begin with, so my morning routine is usually trying to convince myself to get out of bed for about an hour.
Fair enough.
I try to meditate every day, or at the very least, like, set my intentions in a, like, write it down, my goals and my intentions every day. It doesn't really bother me what time. It's more like, how am I feeling and do I need it? And if I'm feeling like, if I wake up frazzled, then I will do it. If I wake up, like, chirpy and happy, then I'll probably do it later on in the day when I need that kind of, like, grounding exercise. But yeah, I've met some people that do, like, the cold shower, this 5 a.m. rise, the meditation, and then the workout. And I'm like, dude, that sounds fucking horrible. Like,
so I
can't imagine anything worse. Yeah.
I heard Dave Asprey from Bulletproof Coffee. Yeah, he spoke and he said a cold shower in the morning, you know, you, like, is the most important thing. It's great for your health. So I actually went back to the hotel that the next morning and I tried to take a cold shower. I thought I was going to die.
Like, yeah. Listen, I'm not going to name names here. It's not Dave, but I know someone that wrote that promotes that lifestyle, and they were telling me it's, like, the worst idea ever, and so I'm like, I would take it with 2 cents. If it works for some people, it works.
True.
Yeah.
The last question I have for you is, if you were standing on top of a mountain and you had the entire world listening and you could say whatever you wanted and get one message across to them, what message would you have for them?
Oh, I would say you are beautiful and you are a gift to the world. A reminder to everyone. Yeah.
Perfect. Kat, thank you so, so much for doing this. Really appreciate having you on this. This was something that was in the discussion a year ago before I even launched the podcast. Actually longer, 2 years almost, about starting a podcast and doing it. I'm happy that we finally got it done. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me, and well done on everything, Jason. You rock.
Appreciate it.